All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pro Photoshop Podcast, episode number 77. It's June 21st, 2011, and we've got a panel here today to talk all about photography.
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
All right, everybody, welcome. Good to have you. We have a good panel of people, some veterans on here today, and it's going to be a good time. We've got Mr. Barry Howell, B Groover. How's it going?
B Groover. It's going great, G Man.
All right. Actually, I'm G Pixel today, but that's okay. That's okay, buddy. And Dennis Zerwas, the old faithful Dennis Zerwas, or as we know him, Z Power.
I am doing great, Gav Zizzle.
And the one and only Kara Garrison, Mr. K, welcome. Good to have you on board.
Yeah, good to be here. Super Sime.
And back from the dead. Well, that didn't sound right. Back from a long hiatus, Mr. Jared Michael J. Roller. Welcome to the show.
J. Roller. I like that one. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you on board. All right. That's everybody's handle for today. We got Z Power, B Groover, Mr. K, G Pixel, and the J. Roller. Let's keep that in mind as we spin up some classic vinyl and bring them out some old 4x5 film today on Pro Photo Show. All right. On a more serious note, let's talk about making money. No, everybody laughs. I guess that's not happening. So we'll move on. No, okay. Sorry. So I'm in one of those moods today. Okay. Let's look, before we get into some topics, we're going to have some good tips and kind of some, I think we're going to talk about backup and data management and maybe some general random photo tips and all kinds of good stuff. But let's start with a little bit of news, a little bit of general happenings. And a quick shout out, this show brought to you today by Simofex Photo Tools and the new Digital Darkroom workshops that are coming out. So we'll chat a bit more about those later, but check them out over at simofex.com, S-E-I-M-effects.com. And what's new in the news, everybody? Anybody have any exciting new stuff? And I'll let you guys go first, and then I'll open my mouth so that people can get a word in edgewise.
Well, has anyone else, I'm in Southern California, but has anyone else been noticing the price of equipment going through the roof?
I've been noticing the price of everything going through the roof, and I'm trying to figure out which politician to call.
I mean, the 580 EXs here locally are pushing almost $500. I mean, the supply is definitely lower than demand right now, and I don't know if that's how much of that is they're making an excuse to try and raise the prices, but I mean, it's, you know, they're all blaming it on the tsunami and everything, and you know, maybe some of that's true, but man, it's not a good time to be buying some equipment.
Well, and that's bad because I have to buy two new 580s because of all my gear that got stolen a month or so ago. And but it's, you know, I mean, I think we can say, well, maybe tsunamis affect supplies and this and that. But I think really what we're dealing with, and, you know, we don't want to turn this into a politics show, I don't suppose, which I could. But I mean, our dollar, at least here in the United States, is plummeting. I mean, costs are going up. The cost of living's going up. The chance of living's going down. And it just seems to keep rolling that way. I mean, what do we do? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate if you're in the market to buy stuff. I mean, the 7D actually just had a price drop on B&H, and so did the 60D, but
the new stuff coming out or the real hot ticket items, flashes always seem to be high. But you're right. I mean, lately things are bad.
So there's that. Not good news, but I mean,
well, and it's not just that either. I mean, it's everything. I mean, my family's in the home improvement business, and that's where I was in the day job up to a few years ago when I started doing all this full time. And you know, I went in there the other day and I didn't even realize, I'm looking around and carpeting for floors and stuff, and I remembered, you know, specifically, hey, this carpet was like, you know, $16 a yard or whatever, and this is how much you could, this was a good range carpet, not cheap, not the highest end, it was good. And I'm walking around and it, you know, I go in there all the time, but I started looking at price tags, and this same stuff is like $24 a yard now. I mean, the prices of this kind of stuff in 3 years has doubled. And I suppose petroleum being high, you know, whatever reasons are behind all that, I mean, that affects everything. It affects shipping. Yeah. It affects plastics. You know, everything
gas
we do.
Gas affects everything in the world. You can, I mean, look at, you want to see how bad it is, you can look at how much a gallon of milk is to rate how much all individual products are, because milk rates will go up with gas rates, and it's kind of like both ends of the spectrum. So everything's in between those two products.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. What do you do?
Try to weather the storm as much as you can. But going back to that, the supply and demand, I think that, yes, the horrible tragedy in Japan did affect the supply lines for Canon and the rest of them, and it had it. But I highly doubt that there was only one major warehouse facility in Japan and nowhere else in the world. You know, I mean, it's very... I don't know.
I think it goes way beyond, you know, the tragedy in Japan, really. I mean, I think that certainly, you know, kind of threw a hitch in things, but I think it's just everything that's going on, and it's tough these days, and I don't know, especially gas. I mean, I go on these road trips, and it's costing me a fortune. Mm-hmm. I'm actually working on some new technology. I've got this new car I'm building that instead of gas, it runs on brain power, and all I got to do is put the B-Groover in there, and it'll just run for free.
Who's B-Groover again? Am I B-Groover, or what is it?
B-Groover's Barry, but actually, I could put Z-Power. Okay. The slot is designed to hold Z-Power, too, because either one is going to make the car go.
This is going to be the greatest action cartoon ever.
I'm already working on the logo right now.
You're sketching, aren't you?
You know what? This might be the new thing for photography, is like photographers, they got to have like handles, and be, you know, they got, it's like to build this whole radio personality thing for wedding photographers. Who did you get? Well, I had the B-Groover at my wedding.
We have the Becker here, so. I mean.
You got to kind of jazz that up a little bit.
Well, he has like B-School and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of where the B-Groover is inspired from. But Barry being a radio personality and stuff, you know.
Go look at no one down here goes by their real name. We got Jasmine Starr. We got
Well, that's
Becker.
Not her real name?
No.
What?
Joe Photo. I mean, we got a lot of guys down here that don't go by their real name.
I believe the police call that aliases.
Yeah, you California people, it's all Hollywood. It's all theater for you guys. You know, us Westerners, like me and Dennis. Well, Dennis isn't out west, but yeah. Anyway,
nope. How do we get here?
So, how do we make money in photography?
What, there it is.
Let's move on. That's a very challenging question that we literally could talk the whole show about, and it seems like we turn every show into that. And I'm not sure we've quite figured it out yet. But something's gonna settle down. I just wish we're on this note of everything's really expensive. Why can't our photography be really expensive?
And that's the thing. Nobody values labor. They don't value service. And that's the unfortunate side effect of what's happening right now, is the tangible goods are tangible goods. But when it comes to the service that someone's provide, it has become extremely devalued. And things like Craigslist, which have driven the prices down on some things, it's got an effect overall. Even at the mid-range, maybe not at the high end, but certainly at the mid-range, even those people who would never hire someone on Craigslist, I think just that overall mentality has filtered through, and people are looking for better deals on stuff. Well, they're looking for lower prices because they just don't value someone's time.
I think it's even more. I mean, I think definitely there's a lot of devaluing going on, particularly in photography, but even across the board and things. I think also, I mean, the economy's terrible, and people are looking to pinch pennies wherever they can. And there's also more people, you know, at least in the United States, the unemployment rate is higher than it's been in ages. I don't know all the numbers, but I know it's really bad. So you got people out there, you know, you mentioned Craigslist. I mean, there's a lot more people out there who are willing to work on your yard or, you know, do handyman work or whatever business you're in, that, you know, they're just trying to put food on the table.
I mean, I kid you not. I was really upset one day because I had just seen like 10 posts on Craigslist for people wanting free photographers. Come shoot my wedding for the experience. So I did a post on there and I'm like, hey, I need brakes done on my 2002 Ford Taurus. You know, I can only pay $50, but at least you'll be able to put this Ford Taurus on your resume.
Right.
And I got 3 calls.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I'm like, so now I can put my car repairs out for bid.
Did you have it done for $50 to see what happened?
No, I didn't need them done. I was just kidding.
I just can't believe you got responses to that. I guess it's not just wedding photography is what that proves.
It's people are willing to take almost anything. And when the market is willing to take less money, it's going to drive the price down.
Well, and when people don't have jobs, that's going to happen too, because, you know, you do take anything. I mean, you do what you can to try and to feed the family and pay the rent. And it's not an ideal situation, but you know, the same people out there buying stuff, they might have less money than they normally would too. So I don't know. I mean, you know, now we're getting into this whole economics things, which I'm sure we could do a whole show about, but something's got to happen. And I don't know what it's going to be, but it's not just photography that's suffering right now. And I think, I don't know. I don't have an answer really.
And well, to spin this back around to us, it's the same thing. I mean, we've talked about it on this show. We've talked about it on my show. We've talked about it all over the place is you have to be a differentiator in your market for people to put an extra value on you.
Right. And I think there has to be a lot of focus on excelling at your craft. But not only that, on the business side of, you know, getting yourself out there, getting yourself seen. And even that's tough. I mean, there's some of the best photographers I've ever met that I know, you know, they might be getting by, but they're struggling too. It's everywhere. So I don't know. I guess really all we can do, I don't have the power to fire all our politicians right now. So
right now,
and being a conservative, that's probably what I would do. But
at the moment,
yeah, I'm working on that.
Right, but I think what we have to do is we need as photographers to become better salespeople.
Yes,
and because people don't buy from companies, they buy from people. They buy from someone that they've developed a relationship with in the, you know, broad sense of the term. If you buy an Amazon, that's not the case. But if you have face-to-face meetings with people, you're going to buy from somebody that you've got a connection with, that you've developed a trust with, over what the actual price is. And that's an important piece. So how do you develop those sales skills? And many of us being, you know, artists and creatives don't like to get into this salesman mentality, because you have to really play on emotions and these key things that get people motivated to buy. And that's a whole philosophy behind that. And I recently ran across a fantastic series of audio recordings from Phil Sugarman. And you can Google this and find the Sugarman tapes.
Okay.
And if you don't know who this guy was, he was the guy who was behind the marketing concept of direct marketing, TV marketing. And he started with the blue blocker sunglasses. Does anyone remember those?
No.
Yeah.
They became a household name, sold millions of these cheap, crappy sunglasses, but he took the emotional attachment to it, and, you know, oh, it's going to save your eyes, and, you know, there's like 26 key motivators, and it ranges from proving that, you know, being an expert in the field, you know, being able to set timelines for people, and all these things. And if you listen to this series of audio recordings, is some hugely valuable information. Now, you may not be able to apply 26 things to a single sales call, but it can go a long way in helping you to come up with the things that you need to be talking about to address what people are looking for.
And you raise a really good point. The marketing is huge. I don't think it should be forgotten that, you know, we also have people out there who barely even know how to take photographs. And then, and they're, you know, some people are starting a business when they're really not ready to be starting a business, both technically and in a marketing sense. And I think all the basics need to be considered. We're kind of getting off topic because we went from news into making money really fast, which is, I guess that's what we're all trying to do these days, is keep our heads above water and keep the bills paid. So let's come back to this. Let's talk, see if anything else is going on in the news, and anybody have any cool things they've seen lately?
I can't, but I can't talk about them.
Okay. You got super secret stuff going on. What about this Pentax 645D? Has anybody seen this?
No.
No. Well, I've seen it, but...
I think this is not something to slough off. I think this is significant. And I think why... is because the truth is, and I know this isn't a very popular thing to say, but not nearly everybody out there saying they're a photographer can make it as a photographer. The world cannot support as many photographers as we have right now. And I think what we're going to see going forward is that the to be in the middle to upper range, people are really going to have to market well. They're going to have to excel at their craft. They're going to have to stand out. And I think we're going to start seeing perhaps a pattern of people going back to an upper crust of equipment and technology in terms of getting as good as they can get. It's funny because when I started out, you know, you'd go out and buy a 35 millimeter camera, and the serious people like you, Barry, would have looked at me as just a punk kid. I wasn't a serious photographer. I was shooting with a 35 millimeter. Now we're all using the equivalent of 35 millimeter DSLRs, and it's good enough, is what we're all saying. And don't get me wrong, they're really good. And I'm not saying everybody's going to run out and buy a Pentax 645. It's just, here's a medium format camera, 40 megapixels, that is clearly an upper end camera. And I think, you know, I sure noticed when I went out on my spring trip and I was running around in national parks and things like that. And you can take a 5D or a 1 series camera and run around in a national park and you literally are one of the ants. I mean, hundreds and thousands of people have that same stuff and they're running around taking photos. You take a Hassie, or in my case, a Linhof 4x5, and put that up there and, you know, get under the ground glass and the cloth, and people take note and they stop and they ask questions and you give away business cards and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I'm just musing here, but what do you guys think about this?
Well, for one thing, I mean, looking at the body of this camera, I just pulled it up here on the link. I mean, it doesn't look that different than most of the DSLRs that are running around out there.
It's big. Mm-hmm. If you see it in somebody's hand, it's big.
And then I also noticed too is that a lot of, you know, I see that there's the 40 megapixels, and we've said on the show before that that's not the main thing you should be looking at when looking at a camera is the megapixels. You know, it's the optics and then the quality of the sensor. And I happen to know a certain Twin Cities photographer who happened to find an old Hasselblad lens, and he created some images on a Nikon D300S. Which is a crop sensor using this high-end, I believe it's an 80-millimeter lens that was ridiculous. I mean, just you could zoom in, you're at 100%. Oh, keep going, 200%. Like, just detail in the skin tones and flesh tones that you would not believe. So I think we kind of have to, yeah, the 40 megapixels are very intriguing, but we got to remember that it's the quality of that glass that we're putting on front of that lens.
Especially for a lot of people, it's not about the number of megapixels, although increasingly 40 megapixels is really relevant to me because I'm getting into prints that the quality when compared to what you would get with a film or something, I'm realizing that it's just not there. So 20 megapixels is paltry to me in comparison to what we might have got with medium format film back in the day. But at the same time, I think this is more than just megapixels. I mean, you're getting into a medium format surface area. You're getting into a medium format glass. So I think there's more to it than this. And so I'm not only talking about the fact that, yes, this camera has a lot of megapixels. It's big. It's got, you know, it's beefy. It's got a lot of power. But I'm also talking about the fact that it's setting people apart. But I really think we're going to see a trend. I think Canon's going to have to come out with something with a lot more megapixels and gearing to satisfy the medium format crowd. And I think, honestly, you know, my predictions have certainly been wrong before, but I think we're going to see more people going out and a trend of them trying to step it up and doing larger, higher-end cameras and getting back in this range where we have, you know, the basic camera, or I shouldn't say the basic, we have the compact SLR, we have the medium format, maybe even eventually going into large format stuff, because there's a reason they did all that in film. And surface area affects dimension, affects how the image is put on there. Well, I think they're running into issues with the smaller sensors in terms of the pixels are too tightly packed, so it's causing them technical issues, just all these different factors.
But that's technical things aside, when we're dealing with probably the majority of the people who are making money who listen to this show and my show, they're doing weddings, they're doing portraits and things of that nature. And if you're dealing with, let's say, the average 10x10 album that has 4 pictures per page on it, the average size picture is smaller than a 5x8. The resolution is irrelevant. What matters most is it a good image? And that's what I'm not seeing in a lot of new people. They don't understand lighting. How many people say they're a natural light photographer because they don't know how to use flash?
Oh, absolutely.
And those types of things that separate you by learning your craft better make the equipment less and less relevant.
Well, but understand what I'm getting at. But I'm talking about photographers that are actually going to be taken seriously 10 years from now. There's no way with the way people are throwing around the word, I'm a photographer, and they just go out and buy a camera, literally. I mean, I've seen people have websites before. Their photos weren't even in focus. It was like they got a camera last week and made a business card. And this, I've seen this happen in my area.
I see it happen here all the time.
It's happening all the time.
And they get hired.
Yeah.
That's the other part.
But what I'm saying is, people are going to start to catch on to this, I think.
Yes.
And I think you're going to get back to it's not going to be very long before there's nothing cool about saying you're a photographer. I'm almost embarrassed sometimes to say I'm a photographer now because I know people are thinking, oh, you're another one. And it's becoming a joke to say you're a photographer now. And I think you don't go out and spend 10 grand just because you want a bigger camera. That's not a good reason. And somebody that doesn't really know what
it's not. For
somebody who's an amateur, 40 megapixels and bigger lenses and bigger sensors, no, it's not going to make them any better. What I'm talking about is the people that are the upper crust, that are experienced, that want absolutely as good as they can get, and they're going to sell on that, and they're going to go out to that wedding, and getting back to, there's the photographer, he's that guy with a Hasselblad. This guy is serious. He's not a guy that went out and bought a camera over the weekend. But maybe I'm not.
I've seen the same thing, though. I mean, I've gone up when I was shooting with my 30D, with my 20D as my backup, and I show up at a wedding, and Uncle Bob has a 5D with the 7200. You know, Uncle Bob's got more expensive equipment than I do, and yet I can easily take better pictures than he can.
Of course you can. And I'm not. But the thing is, sometimes it's actually a struggle. When I go to a wedding, I want people to actually know I'm the photographer. I put out an effort to make sure that I get noticed, not in the middle of the reception, like standing in front of everybody, but like throughout the day, I try to make sure that people realize it's part of my brand to make people know that I am like the official photographer. And I've taken to putting, you know, when I make Facebook albums and things like that, it says Ashley and Chris's official wedding photos, because and sometimes it's like, you know, maybe a bit pretentious and stuff like that, but I want to make sure people know it's so hard because everybody there is a photographer now. And I don't know, Barry, do you have any insight to this? Because you've told me before that back in the day when you had a camera that was something special, it made a difference.
Well, again, back in the day, and let's just, you know, it wasn't that far back, that clearly when you, and I think you brought up earlier, when you sported that kind of medium format sort of camera system, they looked so different than what most people were used to seeing because it wasn't a 35 millimeter type setup. What always amazed me is how many times it was the doctors and lawyers type crowd that would be attending or at these weddings. And as I'd be loading my gear, and I had personalized license plates for years that said Hasselblad. And it was amazing. It was that crowd that would always reference and make comments of, oh, you use Hasselblad. Oh, that's a Hasselblad. I was fascinated by that. None of them probably never owned a Hasselblad, but they knew what that brand meant. And it was prestigious and it was a classy thing. And you just looked like something. And I totally agree. We so often now we don't look any different than anybody else, other than sometimes we have flashes on cool brackets and
right.
there's no question about that. But I think that, and Carrie makes a great point, I mean, ultimately it comes down to the picture, the image that people ultimately look at. Obviously that makes all the difference. Now what was interesting to me is I attended a wedding a couple of weeks ago. There were a couple of bozos shooting. Okay, I won't sugarcoat it. And I mean, my poor wife, you know, she was tired by, you know, halfway through the ceremony, just trying to hold me down as I watch these two idiots back and forth and up and down. And they're just making an absolute circus out of, you know, their pictures. The day after that wedding on Facebook, there was one of their relatives, I think, who was sitting there with a Canon 50D and a zoom lens, and it was an outdoor ceremony. She had a bunch of pictures that she put up on Facebook that the bride put and tagged onto her own page immediately. They weren't the official pictures at all. They were actually decent. I mean, they were fine, you know, for from her perspective and whatnot. I still haven't seen what these actual pictures that these guys, I talked to them a little bit at the reception, and you know, they're the typical pair of guys that they shoot 5,000 to 7,000 images a wedding, and they never took a camera, a flash off camera. Everything was just a million pictures of everything. Exactly. And they were all over the place. And there's just no discernment. And I think the biggest piece of advice is to just take a minute to actually have some point and purpose to every image you're going to shoot. Think about it. And, you know, back in the day when, hey, with my Hasselblad stuff, it basically, and Dennis can remember this back in the day, it basically cost us every time we squeezed the shutter for film processing and printing.
And I think if people tried to do that today and try and mentally think, it's going to cost me a dollar every time I press the shutter.
Yep.
Just try and have that in your back of your mind. What if this cost me a buck every time I took a picture?
Right.
And use that as a guiding line. Do I want to shoot 5,000 images, or do I want to shoot a few hundred that are keepers?
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not about the quantity. It's about the quality you produce.
But when money's not involved in that, that's when they start shooting, you know, 5,000, 7,000 images a wedding just to get the shot, you know, and every frame is the bride turning her head a quarter of an inch, you know, and trying to get everything. And they don't see that as lost money because they're going to just take, usually they just take all those photos, throw it on disk and hand it to the bride without even doing any post-production other than getting it into the computer itself. I attended a wedding like that a while ago where the venue, it was my cousin's wedding, but she didn't want me to shoot it because I was attending it, obviously. And the venue is got a 360 walls of worth of window and glass, and it was at night, so you could see everything. And these two guys, they had on-camera flash shooting directly into the bride with the glass behind them, and the flash would just bounce right back at them. So in every single photo you saw was always this little, you know, the flash popping up somewhere around the bride or the groom, and they didn't even take that out. And it was a photographer where she saved money getting them on Craigslist and going about it that way. And, you know, they just didn't do enough research. They didn't ask me. They didn't do enough research. They didn't look into it well enough. And all they saw was less money. So I'm getting the same thing for less money, which obviously she wasn't.
But J-Roller, they were just doing bounce lighting. Don't you know what
is? I'm going to bounce light off of a window. It'll be perfect.
I'm trying to backlight from the bounce.
I guess I would be backlighting at that point.
What I think is going to change is not that there will never be newbies in the industry. I mean, and everybody starts somewhere. That's the way it works. I think what will change in 10 years is as the kind of the digital fad and everybody being a photographer becomes not as big of a deal. Yes, we'll still have newbies. I think what's going to change is the consumer is going to start to realize that they're being shamed, that you're not a photographer just because you say you're a photographer because you bought a camera. And I think not everybody, but I think you're going to have more consumers who actually stop and look and say, is this person actually know what they're doing? Like if you go hire somebody to put a new roof on your house, you want to make sure they can actually put it back.
We've been having this same discussion for the last, you know, 3 years and saying that this is going to happen and the consumers are going to get smarter. And they haven't.
I don't know if that's true. More and more, I hear from consumers, and I feel like they're starting to notice. And I said 10 years. I don't think this is happening overnight. I just think in time, it's no longer going to be cool. It's not going to be the thing like, oh, look, I have a digital camera. Everybody's going to have a digital camera. The question, I think, more so is going to be what you can do with it. And I think the people, and the Pentax 645 is just interesting to me. And I think why it's relevant in that category is because I think the photographers that are at the top class photographers are going to be looking not only for ways to differentiate themselves and the gear they use, but more than that, they're going to meet. I mean, right now, I could use 40 megapixels. I could use 100 megapixels right now. I mean, I could do more than what I can get on a 5D Mark II with a camera that offered me more.
I know, but if tomorrow a new camera came out that would shoot 3D images that didn't require a special monitor to view, and you put them on your TV and they became holographic images, 1,000 people here in Orange County would go out and buy that and start offering it to wedding clients, saying, I have got the latest, greatest technology, even though they don't know a clue how to use it. And that it is completely pointless.
The battle kind of starts all over again at that point, but I can only speak based on what we have now. I don't think we're really that close to having holograms.
I think you're right that we're in a transitional period in terms of now everyone can get a Canon Rebel or something like that and have a crop sensor and have interchangeable lenses, and you can call yourself a wedding photographer. But when you're coming back to the general public, they need a marker for someone, a materialistic item that says, that differentiate someone as a professional or different levels in something. And that's where these medium formats are going to come into play. Because I do think, I agree with you, Gavin, that the professional is going to go to the medium format again when it becomes digital medium format, when it becomes more available, cost effective, things like that. And then everyone else is going to be in the DSLR range. And that's where we're going to be for a while. And then everyone's going to shoot on medium format and there's going to be something else. But right now we're in that transitional period. And I do believe that, you know, and we do a lot to educate the public and say, you know, this is what makes a great photographer and here's my information and this is how I can educate my public. That's what you want to do. But the public really needs a marker, a brand of some sort to say, hey, what is that? Can I, you must be serious because you have that.
Why aren't we considered the same as other professional services where the mark of being a professional is being licensed and bonded?
But that's not. Even in a world of, let's say, home improvement, since my family does that, it's to a differing degree because not everybody wants to be a tile installer. And there's tons of people out there working, undercutting the other people who aren't licensed and bonded, and people are doing the same thing. They're going out and they're hiring them, just like the car example.
But you know, you're making a conscious decision. I am going to pick somebody who there shouldn't be any question that they are less skilled because they're not licensed and bonded because I want to save money. But if I want a professional, I have that marker to say this is what makes somebody a professional versus
someone
who's
People don't care about the marker as a rule. I mean, I worked in the retail side of the store for years, and I can't remember one person ever asking, are you guys licensed and bonded? Now, there's times where it becomes relevant. You know, let's say you're working in a house and there's a bank loan and there's, you know, you had to follow certain rules, whatever it is that you're dealing with. But at the end of the day, the license and bonding, as a rule, it seemed like it worked good for, like, you know, the government making some money on it. But the end user, consumer, you had people that were licensed and bonded. All they had to do was pay the money to do it. They had to have no particular skill. So you had the consumers that didn't really care because whether you were licensing was really not relevant. Being licensed and bonded was whether you were willing to put up the money to get the license and the bond.
Well, this is where it comes back to play, where the camera is definitely just a really expensive pencil, and it's what you can do with it. It's just that not everyone in the world knows about it, but on over here in New York, where we have, you know, the brides are pretty well educated when they walk in my door. They you know, they look at the Knot magazines and they have everything with them and they have their list of what to ask photographers. And the point is that to make yourself a professional and to stand out there, you have to run down those sales techniques and position yourself as the one that they want to go with. You have to care about them and be their friend in a way, not just to make the sale, but understand them and know where they're going through, which has nothing to do with the equipment. It has to do with your personal sales skills. And basically, I think what we're talking about here is a culmination of everything, and that's how you're going to continue to make money in this business through this hard economic time.
Yeah, I think it's
you're going right back to what I said originally with
absolutely
the Joe Sugarman stuff and understanding those key triggers.
Absolutely. And that's there for the reason.
It's because most photographers are poor salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can learn to be a salesperson, you can get over all the objections of, well, why aren't you shooting with, you know, an 800 megapixel camera? And why don't you have three backups? And, you know, why aren't you giving me, as long as you're addressing all the key triggers, you're going to be more successful than someone who is just saying, but look at my sample album.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's all relevant, and we're kind of getting down a rat hole. We should probably move on. But my what caught my eye is here we have a medium format digital for $10,000. It hasn't happened before, and I think that there's some potential here going forward.
Well, and the one thing I want to say to that is, Kerry, I really like the way you brought up the whole valuation of our time and talent. I thought about this, you know, a few weeks ago. I was needing to replace a fuel pump on my truck, and I'm talking to my local service shop, you know, right in my local little town, and he's got a handwritten board right inside the door of his service garage. Labor rate, $98.50 an hour, handwritten. He changes it, you know, like the wind, right? And I said, so I asked him, I said, how do you come up with that number? Well, you know, price of gas, as it goes up, I have to raise it because it costs me more to operate my business when gas goes up, which I find fascinating. Again, it's just one more person saying, well, here's an opportunity to, you know, to raise my rate. But if we're going to get our truck fixed, well, we don't really question the labor rate. I mean, we might call another service garage and ask them, but, you know, they're so upfront, transparent with it. We're so afraid to charge for our time.
Yeah.
that as photographers, you know, we're just nervous Nellies. We're just trying to book the job. And, you know, we get so caught up in these sort of mythical package numbers so often. And we really do kill ourselves more often than not, it seems, without even being intentional about it. But we keep marketing and promoting and advertising, and we're offering deals. And, boy, we just have to stop and think. And one of the things that drives me crazy about the 5,000, you know, image wedding shooters that are out there is they obviously aren't valuing
their
post-production slash editing time. Exactly. Their time is apparently worthless because I really don't want to have to edit that many images. I'd rather just shoot fewer images and shoot good images. And as Dennis pointed out, I tell you what, when I slap that 80 millimeter Zeiss lens onto my camera, it's a different experience for me. I can't shoot as fast because it's not autofocus, but it's a manual focus lens that actually was meant to be manually focused. It has resistance against the barrel. It isn't that ridiculous short little throw we get when we try and manually focus a DSLR. It's a bright, clear, snappy image. The image quality is insanely good. I keep it in my bag all the time. It's an ancient old 80mm 2.8, you know, planar lens that obviously I have to shoot full manual, stop it down, whatever. But on my crop sensor, it's a 120 2.8 lens that delivers ridiculous optical performance. Am I going to shoot 50 pictures of wedding? Never. But I'm going to do a series of maybe a dozen shots, and I'm just going to know that when I pull those images up, they're just going to jump off my screen like nothing else in my bag.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had clients lately. I go to meet them, and they say, well, you know, the last guy I talked to is going to give me 3,000 images on CD.
Yeah, I love that one.
And I'm like, I'm not going to. I mean, I don't want
to. I wouldn't do that to you. Yeah, I wouldn't do that to you.
I mean, so not only are they not valuing their time, they're really not valuing their client's time because you cannot mentally cope with 3,000 images from your wedding.
But, you know, Gary, I like the way you presented it, and that's the perfect way to do it, is the marketing way. You presented it. It's a positive that you don't. It's not like, oh, well, I just don't usually give that many photos. It's like you're essentially saying without saying it, yeah, people that give that many photos aren't very professional, are they?
Yeah. I just say, would you rather have 3,000 crappy images or would you rather have 100 awesome images?
People seem to a lot of photographers, particularly starting out, is somebody's breathing right into the mic and it's given a lot of audio pop.
Probably me. Sorry.
Are you okay, Dennis?
Thank you, Dennis.
Yes, certain members of the round table are making me laugh. So,
okay, sorry.
Please continue with the intellectual speaking now.
Now I lost my train of thought. You had that Darth Vader breath going on over there, and it completely.
Because I was trying not to laugh, but
but you were doing it anyhow.
It's Jared. It's Jared being back. I'm so happy he's back. He gets me going. It's been too long.
Nice.
And I still love those Subway commercials you do. It's awesome.
Thank you. I'm still living off those residuals. It's a wonderful day.
Great. Nice. All right, moving on. Let's get to another topic.
Yes, let's move on. And just to wrap, I'm not saying that if you have a medium format camera, that's what makes you a good photographer. Just so I don't get emails, like, this is not what you need to buy to be cool. I'm just thinking it's interesting. Okay, next topic. What's somebody have to talk about? Anything else new happened in the news? You know, there's no Lightroom 4s or incredible news that I know about. Gosh, I don't even think any new cameras other than what we just talked about have been released lately that really are earth-shattering.
Yeah, things are kind of quiet right now.
It's a little silent. So a
lot of rumors. If you like the rumors, you're trying this. But
well, and that's the thing. It's just making me wonder what's going on behind the scenes, because it's like, you know, Canon's 1D Mark IIIs is really long in the tooth. I don't even know if they show it on their website anymore, and they still haven't replaced that yet. You know, it's like, what are you guys doing over there? What are you working on, kind of thing? And it's making me wonder. I sure feel like we're about due for a new generation of cameras. I mean, a few years ago we had kind of that 5D Mark II D3 generation, and it changed things, kind of amped up a lot. It changed things a lot, and I think we're about due for another round of that. So we'll see.
Well, Canon just came out with those lenses in the last few months, so I'm sure our new bodies are going to be on the way because they're all pretty much long in the tooth. But I think they're more consumer-driven than they are prosumer, you know?
Well, consumers and newbie prosumers are their huge market. They're the ones out there buying everything they can get their hands on to try and get into the game, as it were.
Well, and Gavin, I ran into our area Canon rep not long ago and had this conversation just to see what, you know, his pulse was. And, you know, he pretty much gave the, well, you got to realize, guys, I mean, the professionals really aren't our market. I mean, they're a declining breed. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it's the prosumer market that drives the whole thing. That doesn't mean that Canon and Icon are going to stop making professional gear, but we are significantly less relevant and important to the grand scheme of things.
Well, it's a no-brainer for them because there's 1,000 new people every weekend who decide they want to go to Best Buy and buy a camera and start a Facebook page and be a photographer, and Canon right. loves that. Nikon loves that. I mean, they sell a ton of cameras, and then, you know, if those people, admittedly, all those people are certainly not going to make it in business, you know, they'll kind of go away and a whole new crop will come in. It's a constant revenue stream.
And they all need soft boxes.
Exactly.
There's rumors about a new aperture for Apple, but again, those are just rumors.
Yeah, and it's hard to get too much going with rumors, but I imagine we're, you know, aperture and Lightroom. I mean, it seems like it's not too far out before we'll be seeing new versions of both those, because same deal. I mean, Adobe likes to get those versions out and and resell it. I mean, they'll charge you for a 0.5 release if they can.
Absolutely, and they did.
Yeah.
With Photoshop.
Anyway, yeah. Dennis, you're awful quiet over there. Anything going on that you thought was interesting lately, or are you just kind of listening to all us crazies over here?
Well, I'm kind of gun-shy since I got in trouble for blowing on the microphone. So, I've been actually out there shooting. I don't have time to look at the news this time of year, really. I had 4 weddings the last 5 weeks, so this is my busy time of the year right now.
That's what I call Z-power.
Is that me?
Yeah,
or is that Jared? That's me, okay.
Dennis,
yes, that
who else has Z in their name? Come on.
Well, you know what? Oh, Z, the letter Z.
Yeah, Z power.
So I haven't been a lot of stuff just kind of whizzes by on the Twitters and the internets about news and things happening, and it just kind of blurs by while I sit here in Lightroom editing and shooting pictures. So
awesome. Okay, well, good topics. Not a huge amount of news, but it sure segued. It's funny how even the news topics these days segue into these huge conversations about other things. Let's move on. Okay. I'll be right back, guys. That significant pause is so I can cut this out, because I have to have a little, I'll be right back.
Need a smoke break? Well, dude.
Gavin's got to go pee-pee.
Wait a minute. Is this been Gavin the guy, or is this the ventriloquist? Is this the Gavin doll that's been talking?
No, it's not a doll. It's a character. This has been Gavin. This has been just Gavin. And
I'm
then,
so confused.
No, and then Ace is the bird that is like, hey, Gavin. You know, that's kind of, I can't do the voice because it's not what I do. But this has been Gavin, Barry, the whole time.
Okay. All right. Would you maybe text me when it's not, so I know.
I don't know how to tell you this, but the bird is Gavin too.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
consult the book of knowledge and just type in ventriloquist. And I'm sorry I had to tell you that, but it's Gavin.
I got to go pee pee, but I'm holding it.
Ditto.
Anybody want to order a softbox?
I'll have you know, I actually looked at those softboxes when I first saw your little whatever tweet or whatever about it. Intriguing.
They are intriguing. Did you see the video? Because that's I show how small they actually fold up.
Yeah, I saw that. It's I'm gonna pull the trigger on an order soon on the because that's the key for it is I could just fold them up and put them in my big Pelican case and I'm good to go.
My favorite is the 24x24. That's just the 32 seems a little big for a single speed light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the 24 is nice. I like that one.
Well, that's when you got to rock the tri-speed lights. You got to get the tri.
Yeah.
That was fun. I was playing with that the other day. That was really fun.
I've got to get one of those. I want to get the tri-mount with a 72-inch parabolic.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Some nice stuff. I've always wanted to. I just want to master one lighting situation, and I chose speed lights because of the portability and everything. And I just use a bunch of them and whatever the situation calls for, and that's what I stick with right now. I mean, I don't see myself moving around anywhere.
I'm stuck on. I mean, I'm huge speed light fanatic, but I'm in the middle of this big product shoot. I've got 300 little tiny bottles of oil. Don't even ask. Right, but the speed lights were too inconsistent, and I just went, you know what, this is just driving me nuts. And then the recycle times would start to go as the batteries went down. And then one of them actually turned off in the middle. I didn't notice it. So I had 100 images that were gray. And you know, my eyes are blind because I got, you know, 4 speed lights going off in my face. So I'm like, screw it, redo it, pull out the studio strobes, you know. And people, all my friends are coming over and they're like, what do you got those out for? I'm like, just shut up. I know.
I'm solving a problem. Leave me alone.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you're Mr. Speedlight. Shut up.
All right, I'm back, everyone. We're ready to get going.
Did everything come out okay?
Oh, hey, Gav. How's it going?
I'm okay. I'm good now.
Okay.
Now weighs hey, a little.
Gavin, you probably should have muted your mic during that, but
ouch. Awkward. How was that for a Minnesota humor moment?
Well done.
Am I getting started? Am I learning? I'm like, yeah. I know I'm a newbie, but.
That was good, though.
Your timing was good. Pretty good.
I learned that from you.
We'll work on it.
I learned that from you.
Awkward. Oh, no. So proud. No,
seriously.
So proud.
Okay. Since this is kind of, we're having a little break here before we kind of go into the next topic for the day. And most of you don't know this, but when we were down in Minnesota, when I was down in Minnesota last fall for the Lights and Shadows or HDR workshop, we went to, I think it was the Mall of America, and we went to dinner. It was my wife and kids and Dennis and Barry, and I can't remember all who was there. But anyway, we're there, and Dennis, I probably shouldn't even be telling the story. My two-year-old had an accident. And he was all worked up, and Dennis is looking across the table, and Dennis says, "Hey, buddy, it's all right. We all do that sometimes, even me." And he looks my wife right in the eyes and sinks down in his chair and goes, "Oh, awkward." it was like a Minnesota moment there. I don't know if it's just like Dennis and Barry are that way, but I get that kind of weird humor from the Minnesota people. So I don't know. It's pretty awesome.
See, and you're only here for a week. So if you stay here longer, then it's all over.
It could totally pollute my mind.
But shouts out to all my Minnesota friends I met when I went out for the Northern Lights convention. That was very cool.
Awesome. Minnesota people are nice, aren't they?
Yeah. And it was cold. Cold like I've never seen in my life.
So it was May? Heyo!
No, so it was May.
It was February.
I'm just kidding.
It's cold. February. It was freaking cold.
Yeah, that's the problem. I'm not really comfortable with that.
And one of my favorite images is I get this photo of this completely frozen lake with a sign, no lifeguard on duty.
they're not on duty. They just tell you.
Awesome.
Just to be clear.
Cool. All right, well, before we start our next topic, actually, I'm going to throw in, we're going to take a couple of minutes just for some plugs and things coming up. And first of all, this week's show, kind of the sponsor, is the new Digital Darkroom Workshops over on SimFX. And for those of you listening to the last show, I started doing a series of Lightroom workshops, and we're to about workshop 4 on those. We've been doing one every Thursday night on different topics, just kind of these online webinar workshops, so anybody can tune in. They're pretty short in the evenings, like an hour and a half. But there is 2 more on the schedule now that are on a different topic, and one of them I actually just finished putting together before the show started. First one is the Cloning Magic Workshop. That's coming up in July. The first one's coming up on July 11th, and that's going to be all about managing the cloning tools of Lightroom and Photoshop, and it's Cloning Magic, the Art and Science of Pixel Bending. It's going to be about an hour and a half online workshop, and for anybody out there that wants to do more with their cloning and be able to do anything they need to with it, I think this is going to be useful. I think you'll get some good stuff from this one. And so check it out. It's simfx.com/clone, and I will link it in the show notes as well. And I think it's going to be cool. I'm all for getting it right in camera. So if you can move the object, do that. But sometimes we have to clone. And the next one coming up that I'm actually really excited about, I've wanted to do this for a long time, is the Burn and Dodge Workshop. simfx.com/BD. And this is a workshop, same kind of format, same kind of concept, but it's the Burn and Dodge online workshop, The Craft of Digital Tone Control and Direction. And Burn and Dodge, I've always said, is like one of the most underused tools in really refining an image and making it shine, and I'm super excited. So I won't go on and on. If you want to learn more and if you're interested, these are online workshops. That one is coming on August 8th, which is a Monday. It's in the evening. And head over to simfx.com or f164.com, my Fine Art Journal and get information on those workshops. I'm really excited. Does anybody else, Carrie, or any other guys, have any events or workshops or anything coming up that we can throw out there and shout out about?
Yeah. Every month, I'm doing a new webinar in conjunction with Nations Photo Lab.
Awesome.
Different topic every month. So check that out. I'll announce them on Camera Dojo or follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Carrie Garrison or /Camera Dojo. And we've been doing them for a little while. Nations Photo Lab has a new learning center, and we're putting more and more content up there. So we're really trying to make that a great spot for people. And these monthly webinars are really cool. We've been doing Lightroom and Photoshop and lighting stuff. And this week we're going to do one on color management and things like that.
Awesome. So. Yeah, well, Nations Lab has got some good stuff. I know both of us are doing some writing for them for their educational blog, and I saw that you were doing some webinars and stuff, and that sounds like they're kind of rocking it, getting some good content out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Barry, Dennis, Jared, and you guys have anything? Barry and Dennis, I was hoping you kind of have that Minnesota Nice workshop on the schedule.
We're too busy shooting and working right now.
Work? What? Huh? Did somebody? No, sorry. Okay. Jared, do you have anything coming up that we should shout out there?
Yes, it's not as prestigious as you guys because I'm not running my own workshops yet. I hope to do that one day. But I do a lot of lecturing for different events and different organizations around here. And actually, our local Apple store has asked me to come down and be their first speaker in their new local artists series.
Awesome.
And it's going to start in August, so you'll be able to check my website for dates and times and such, and I come down and I talk about who I am, what I do, and how Apple products work within my life, of course, because, you know, it's a little bit of working with the product and being creative at the same time.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very
that's awesome.
Cool.
Very nice. Sounds like fun. Send me a link on that, and I will put it in the show notes.
Will do. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll do that. And a quick shout out, just because we don't do a show every week, I do have something coming up in Vancouver, BC, the Vancouver Island area. I'm going to be speaking at one of the smugs there, so keep an eye on that if you're in the area and you want to come out and say hello. And also going to be doing the Lights and Shadows workshop in Washington again this fall. Don't have all the details on those yet, but I just wanted to mention them. Let's move into, if anybody else doesn't have anything. Wow, that was a bad way to say that. English lesson time. Let's talk a bit about data and data management. This is a topic that I think has been a long time coming. We've talked about it before, but we're past due to come back to this. Technologies have been changing, and just in terms of managing data and kind of the art of organizing, backing up, and dealing with all this information that we deal with today. And I think let's start it off and try not to go too long, but give people kind of a picture of what we're doing and different approaches we're taking so that people make sure they have a good system in place. And starting with just real kind of an overview of what you're doing with your files and how you're making sure that they're safe and managed, and also that you know where to find them, and you know when you need them, they're where you want them to be. Who wants to start here? I think we can.
Yeah, I'll jump in, I guess.
Go for it.
This might take an hour, but
we'll try and be. Let's say we each have five minutes to do an overview, and then we'll come back and recap.
I'm going to do what I can here. I'm going to try and run through this as best I can. I have a primary workstation where I do all my email, my general stuff. Once in a while, I'll edit images on there. I have another very high-end system, a nice Alienware, where that's 90% of all my processing is done on that machine. And then I have my laptop. And once in a while, I'm tethering to my laptop, or I just want to edit a small shoot on my laptop while I'm watching TV. So any one of these machines might be used to work on images. And then they all also might be used to find an image because I need to do samples somewhere, or I'm writing an article and I want to reference an older image. So now I've got three different machines. Well, every night I have a process on each one of those that backs them all up to one of those machines. That's just, it's loaded with hard drives. So I have one main machine that's the repository of everything. And after that, like about 2 hours after those backup jobs go off, another one goes off that backs it up to a network storage array. I've got this Cisco NAS. It's got 16 terabytes.
We're getting some feedback going on over there.
So I've got 16 terabytes of storage in this network or the storage network thing that sits under the desk. And then that is even backed up to another machine that's down in the garage, which just has some basic drives loaded up in it. So if you count that, that's three different locations that things are stored, not counting the original machine that they were on. So there's actually four, but the other machines get cleaned up once in a while. So there's a primary data store that's backed up to a big RAID array, which is also backed up to a set of drives down in the garage. It sounds like a fairly complicated system, but to me, if you only have a file in two places, you have a copy. If you have them in three, you have a backup.
Right, right. I would agree. Now, is one of these off-site? Did I miss that?
No. I'm trying to figure out how I want to do that with somebody, and I'm probably going to swap it out. I got a friend who's about 20 miles away, and we've been talking about just swapping drives back and forth and just keeping storage here or there. But it's so much to try and do online that I can never keep caught up with it mm-hmm. because the amount of storage or the bandwidth that's used. So, but they're in basically three different places of the house. So if the only access you can get because the rest of the house is burning down is the garage, I can grab the box in the garage. There's a box upstairs. There's a box in another place of the house. So they're but dispersed.
If your house gets nuked, you're still in trouble.
If my house gets nuked or falls into a crevasse because the fault here opened up exactly. and swallowed my house, I think I have bigger things to worry about than someone's images from 10 years
but
ago.
But if you survive, you'll be kicking yourself later.
possibly.
Good
so
stuff,
there's that.
Eric. Awesome.
You know.
Okay, and we're gonna let's kind of go through what everybody does, and then we'll come back and kind of do a recap and just talk about different ideas a little bit. So, who wants to go next? Dennis, can you kind of give us a little overview of how you manage data and deal with all this stuff that's going on?
Or not? Okay.
all right, I'll jump in and cover for Dennis.
Okay, Dennis must have gone to get a snow cone.
Probably went up to shovel his driveway. You know, we haven't all the snow we get and so on.
Right.
Our situation is a little different. I don't really spend much time having to touch computers during the day. We've got people that kind of deal with most of that. But basically what happens is we take our images, we create a project folder, actual folder on a separate external drive. We have everything cataloged sort of by category, whether it's, you know, seniors, weddings, families, everybody kind of has their own folders, our own little. We have a chart up on the wall that everybody follows the same protocol so it all goes in the right place. We start by copying the files from the CF cards into this project folder. They are then sucked into Lightroom, where we create a catalog. We do not do individual catalogs for each client. We do them sort of categorically and break them down. That's worked very well to keep the catalogs manageable in size and more efficient for us to go from catalog to catalog. We then back up a second set of images, and incidentally, the Lightroom catalog is on a separate drive from the external drive, so we at that point have images theoretically in two places on two different drives, and then we have a FireWire Drobo that everything is backed up onto from Lightroom. And so we kind of have them on three separate drives. We do not have offsite backup at this point, but I would love to have that.
Right.
And that's going to be something that we too, like Carrie, are kind of trying to wrap our brain around just with the sheer amount of gigabytes we deal with. I mean, just our spring folder of just our dance school business alone was, you know, almost 200 gigs worth of data. And you're not doing that to a cloud, and just not quite enough bandwidth for that. So that's kind of what we deal with. And then we, periodically just rotate drives out, kind of keep older drives with that sort of last ditch type backup there. And I have taken some of the oldest drives that are, we're talking 4 or 5 years removed from use, and I've brought those off site. We take those off, but it is annoying to think that if the entire place just burned down in a hurry and we weren't there, we'd be in pretty tough shape. But boy, dealing with offsites, we just have so much data, I just don't know where to put it all and how to get it keep it current, offsite and current is a real challenge.
Sure, sure. Awesome. Thank you, Barry. Dennis, are you back with us?
Yeah, I was muted. I had some gold stuff there too. We'll just have to wait till it comes up again. Good stuff.
Cool. Well, go ahead. Tell us what you got going.
All right. Well, what I've got going is I shoot the photos. That's the first step, obviously. And then what I do is bring them in to DZ Pix HQ here and import them onto a Mac Pro hard drive. I still burn every single image to a DVD, which is not feasible, but I specifically keep my cards in that 4 to 8 gigabyte range, mm-hmm. so that it's easy to kind of split those up. A little time consuming, but those DVD backups are just taken off site. Those ones are gone. So at least I know I have one pretty reliable form there. From there, they go into a Lightroom catalog that is on, like I said, on the main Mac Pro hard drive. And then once the catalog, and I have switched over to using separate catalogs now. After having a few go corrupt and what a headache that was,
right.
You've changed me in that way as far as switching over to the individual Lightroom catalogs. Once a project is complete, say it's a wedding, it's all edited and done, then what I do is put that Lightroom catalog onto the Drobo, and then I also, those projects get uploaded to SmugMug, which those ones can hold very high. They may even do RAWs. I usually upload 100% quality JPEG, which is overkill for SmugMug. Sure. That's another offsite way of at least having, you know, what the client sees. That's another kind of good backup there. And then once a month, I have an offsite Drobo that those two get to see each other once a month and sync up. And
little Drobo date.
Little Drobo date. I just very white and close the door, and then the next thing I know, they're all synced up, and then that goes off site again. So that is what I have, which is probably slightly confusing, but it's probably overkill. But I've seen people who don't do overkill stuff, and then they run into big problems, especially when clients are paying you money to be a professional. Exactly. You have to do this.
Overkill is important. Good, exactly. Yeah, good on you, Jared. What do you got for us, Jay Roller?
Well, I do a couple of things similar to everyone. I basically, after the shoot, I do everything in one Lightroom catalog right now, per shoot, that is. And I export a copy for the copyright office so I can actually, you know, copyright all my images.
Okay.
And so that goes on a DVD, but other than that, I don't touch DVDs. I have a Drobo here that's used with a Pogo plug, if you guys are familiar with that. Pogo plug allows you to access a physical hard drive that you have at your office or whatever, and essentially creates its own cloud.
Oh, right. And yeah, I've seen those. So they work.
Yeah. Great. So when you hook that up to a Drobo, you could have terabytes of information and accessible anywhere, you know, and you can access it from your iPhone or your iPad or anything like that. So I have everything backing up to the Drobo. Well, you know, the Drobo backing up itself. And then I have a Drobo at home with an older computer where through the Pogo plug, they talk to each other, so they're always in sync.
Awesome.
So I have one at home, and I have one at the office where they talk to each other, and everything's fine that way. I have a, for off-site backups, I have a security deposit box at my bank. And I just take the hard drives out of the Drobo, and I shuffle on over to the bank and put them in there, and the next month I switch them out, and you know it keeps them pretty fresh and new and an offsite backup. It's a month behind, but at least it's something.
Right, right.
And then for my current projects, which is what I say about 3 month intervals, I have a Carbonite account where I back everything up to there.
Awesome.
So between all that, I think I got everything covered.
I guess I'm the only one left. So Dennis, since you started at the wedding with the card, I'm gonna plus one that, and I'm gonna say my whole process. I start by first I was born, then I grew up, and some people say I'm still not grown up. But
you haven't grown up. Okay, come on.
Fine, forget that. I won't plus one you. Okay, so what I do is, it's amazingly how complex all these things sound when we actually talk about them, and in our minds they're not that complex. If I'm doing, let's say I'm doing a wedding, I'm going out to that wedding. And during the day, I am dumping images onto a laptop or a hyperdrive or a Wolverine-style thing, something, so I'm actually making a copy of every card that gets done. Oftentimes, last wedding, for example, I just dumped it onto the computer because I got to prepare as I'm going throughout the day to do that reception slideshow I do, so I just put everything on there. So I have two copies during my event. Now, if I'm doing a portrait session or if I'm out doing landscapes, that works a little bit differently, although I still like to have something that I can make an immediate backup of that card while out in the field so that I don't risk losing it or, you know, the card goes corrupt or something like that. I want to get that information backed up as soon as possible. When I get back to the studio, in the case of said wedding, it's already in a catalog that I've made for that client because I did the slideshow, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll dump that onto the main computer, which is my Mac Pro, and that's the central hub for everything. I mean, I'll remotely access drives if I need files from that. Pretty much, if it's not on the Mac Pro, it's a temporary file. And so all my anything I'm done with goes back to that Mac Pro or something connected to it. I have pending drive is what I call it, which is an internal drive on the Mac Pro, and it's only a 500 gig right now, and that's where my things that I'm currently working with, and for example, this wedding that I'm currently editing would be. Everything then is archived, as well as the pending drive is copied every night to a Drobo, where I have all the data. So the Drobo is the core data storage where everything goes. I use the pending drive because it's faster. In my experience, the Drobo is a bit sluggish. It was making my Lightroom catalogs run really slow, running from my FireWire 800 Drobo. And I hear some of the newer Drobos, they're actually kind of dealing with this problem because it's not simply an issue of the FireWire. I think it's actually that the Drobo is kind of processing and crunching away on all this. I don't know what it is exactly, but I hear the newer ones are a bit faster. But I don't actually work very often from the Drobo because it's too slow. But everything goes onto that Drobo, so that's the core for everything. Every photo that exists for me is on that Drobo. And then what I do is the Drobo, I have a Backblaze, and the Backblaze basically says everything that's on the Drobo is backed up all the time to Backblaze. And that's like $5 a month for unlimited. Admittedly, it's not a high-end backup, but it's cheap, and it gives me one extra redundancy out there. Then I have a drive where I bring it to the studio every month or so, copy everything over from the Drobo, and take that home for an additional offsite. And then also, I don't delete the files from my memory cards and from that backup drive in the field and those other copies I have until I need to, just so I can make sure, you know, everything's settled, everything's backed up. Usually I'll just leave them on there until I need the space again. And by that time, everything is sufficiently backed up if the job isn't all the way out the door. Now, I'm actually working on changing the offsite one, because right now I'm just bringing a big Hurricane drive and copying everything over, and the truth is the drive is no longer big enough. And there's also an issue, my biggest issue with the offsite thing is where you have to actually bring it there and copy it and then take it away, is there's a lack of consistency there. So what I'm working on is I bought one of these guys, and I'll link it in the chat, I'll also link it in the show notes, and it's a Roswell 8 drive storage bay, and it's like $300 and it holds 8 hard drives, and you can just chunk them all in there. And so that's a lot cheaper than a Drobo in terms of, I just need something that holds a lot of drives. So what I'm doing is I actually went in on that with another photographer friend of mine that's in town, and we're going to put that somewhere and, you know, each have 4 drives and just kind of use that as an offsite and over a network, so we have a controlled offsite that we're managing. So that's kind of a piece that's not been completed in my system that I'm working on. But that's how I do it. So that's kind of a recap of how we're all managing data. And, you know, we could go into organizing files and all that kind of stuff. And we'll kind of cover a few of the different thoughts people have on all this now that we've covered everything. But good stuff. So what do people think? To me, the biggest lack that I see here is in our offsite backups. I think an offsite backup is extremely important. I mean, I know it's easy to say, well, I have a ton of backups in the home and or in my studio or whatever, but it's not just a matter of if a fire comes. I mean, if you're out of town and somebody truly comes and cleans you out and they're, you know, they take stuff, they're not going to be discriminatory about leaving you a backup copy. And I think that an offsite is really important. I know it is to me, because I guess what I look at it is, if I lost everything in this studio right now, where would I be tomorrow morning? And what would I have to show from the past, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years of work?
Crying in the gutter.
Exactly. And I think that...
unemployment line.
It's not worth it. It's not... admittedly, my offsite is lacking, I think. But and I think it's a struggle. But how much does it really cost to get something going on off site? Even if you're doing it like, you know, like Jared, like you talked about, and like I do, where we manually take a copy home, and I have the Backblaze as well, as you know, it's one other redundancy. But I just need to know that everything's not right here.
Well, Gavin, you know, throw this perspective into it. You know, I ran a studio for a decade and a half before we went digital, where we had boxes and boxes of negatives. There was no way to back up a negative. You had one negative.
Oh, yeah, it'd be terrifying. I can't. <yeah. laughs> No, I'm serious. I remember when early on in digital, people were like, well, it's so easy to lose this. And you know, we have negatives and those are like a physical thing. But I would comparatively, I'm far more terrified. I mean, now that I'm shooting film, like, the serious photos are being drum scanned and put into digital and going into the whole same workflow that I do for digital. And, you know, I'll hang on to the negatives and the chromes from that. But where I'm going with this is the digital file. And, but I think the point is, I mean, you're right, Barry, but we don't have to be that way anymore. So there's no excuse to.
Mm-hmm. It always worked before.
Well, except for how many stories are there? Yeah, of people losing things. I mean, Ansel Adams. You know, you read Ansel Adams stuff, and what's the one thing he's always bemoaning? His carelessness and losing images in the fire.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts and things to add to this? I think one big thing, it's not just about backup, it's about file management. I mean, people will call for help, or I'll go in and be doing like a consultation for them on managing their files and doing Lightroom and that sort of thing. And it astounds me a lot of times how many photographers don't really know what's going on their computers. And, you know, I'll say to somebody, they'll be looking at files in Lightroom or Aperture, and I'll say, where's this photo at? And they'll say, well, it's right here on the screen. And I'll say, no, where is this photo? And they'll say, oh, it's in Aperture or it's in Lightroom. And I'll say, no, where is this photo? And I think that's another big one aside from backup. I mean, that's a prerequisite. You should be backing up. But I think knowing where your images are is a huge deal too. Because what if you misplace something or something's not in the proper queue to get backed up? I mean, you need to have a plan for where everything goes. And like I was mentioning, everything goes on that main drive. All my customer files are there. I mean, I have a system where all these images are stored. In my case, I'm using separate catalogs. Here's the customer folder. Here's the images. It's not Lightroom by default, and this actually is kind of frustrating to me because they want to make it easy. So by default, it'll just pop up and work. And it puts your images wherever it puts them by default, so people don't think about it. They don't stop to think, where are my images? What's being done with them? Are they being backed up? What happens if this happens? So I think that's a big thing, too, is making sure you have a plan and a system, knowing where things go, and just think all this through.
I mean, if you don't get it, get a friend that does.
Exactly.
And it is very critical. I mean, you can have the best backup plan in the world, but if it's not grabbing your images, you've got nothing.
Right. Make sure you know. And, you know, if you're sitting there right now listening to this podcast, looking at a photo on the screen, do you know right now where that photo resides and if it's properly backed up? And if you don't, your system is lacking.
Yeah. I mean, I come from an IT background,
sure.
So it's second nature to me. I wrote all my own scripts to do my backup, so I know my stuff is taken care of. I don't have to trust something else, but that's certainly not the case with most people out there, and you need to be cognizant of it. And I'm actually thinking about doing an article on the way I do it so people can just copy my scripts and use them,
sure.
Because it can be difficult for people, especially with some of the backup tools that put them into compressed files or their own format, and then you can't get to them if something happens.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think it's important, too, to have things, and you mentioned scripts, Carrie. It sounds like what you're using. I have a program for Mac called Sync. I don't know if people have one that's good for the PC side that they can recommend, but something that's, you know, my main backups between my drives, it's synchronizing things every night in terms of, you know, what's on the pending drive is going to the Drobo, and then that's linked to upload to Backblaze, and make sure you need a system in place that does things without you thinking about it. You can have a manual one too, but there needs to be a system.
And you need to test it once in a while.
Yeah, make sure it's actually happening. Do you have a good recommendation on the PC side for a program where you can automate backup between drives?
I mean, there's stuff that's built into Windows. There's all kinds of utilities out there. I use a program called RoboCopy, but it's command line driven. And that's why I have these batch file scripts that do everything that I need. But once you have it, it's very simple and it's flawless and it just works. So it's a keep it simple, stupid philosophy. that requires a little bit of setup, but once it's done, it will work. Right. But again, you have to test. What if your backup drive is running out of disk space? What if, you know, you changed something and you didn't update your scripts? And so I routinely, you know, about every other month, I go through, you know, is everything in proper sync? Do I need to change anything? You know, I'm always checking my drive space.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always running. I mean, I've always got disk space problems. And when you're dealing with terabytes of data, you start running out of space very quickly. And if you're generating I generate almost a terabyte of data a month.
Wow.
And it's not just photos. I do a lot of video work for some people. And it's a tremendous amount of data.
Yeah.
And so to keep up with that, with drive space and all the backups that go along with it, because nothing irritates me more than I go into Fry's Electronics or, you know, insert your favorite, you know, place to buy hard drives. And I see people buy, like, the new 3 terabyte drive is out, and they buy one.
Right, right.
Like, why aren't you buying two?
Yeah, exactly. What does one drive help you with? Well, and I think for what I usually tell people is get a Drobo. And it's not that the Drobo is perfect. It's that the Drobo is a simple system, and you can plug it in. And it's not it shouldn't be your only backup. You know, people think, well, I have my drives, and the Drobo has redundancy. If a drive fails, it's okay. So that's my backup. No, that's redundancy for your drives, and that's good, but that's not your backup. You know, obviously there has to be other copies somewhere. But I do recommend Drobo or something like it a lot. I think it's a bit overpriced, but it's one of those things that people can just plug in and put the drives in and go. And, you know, for somebody like you who's into RAID and you can set up all this stuff, that's great. But I'd rather people spend a little more money and at least had something that's working than having something that they really have no clue what they're doing, so they just do nothing.
Well, as long as your Drobo, or in my case, I use the Cisco, same type of thing.
Okay.
As long as that's not your work drive, if you have your work drive, you got enough space in your primary machine, that's where your stuff is, and that is then moving it or copying it to that Drobo, at least now you have it in two places.
Right.
But if you put stuff on that Drobo and that's what you're working off of because it has its own redundancy, you're not that's doing not yourself any favors.
You need to have another Drobo or another something somewhere that the Drobo is being backed up to.
It takes accidentally deleting a file once.
Exactly.
Well, it had redundancy. Yeah, you just redundantly deleted it.
Well, and that's actually my concern on the positive side for a manual backup. That's one of my concerns about the fully automated backups is overwriting things. You know, what if you accidentally, for some stupid reason, you accidentally hit a key? And I've done this before, not with something important, but just with little things here and there. What if you accidentally delete a wedding from your main drive? You don't realize it until 48 hours later when it's already synchronized over everything and now it's gone on all your backups too. So then you get into the issue. I mean,
I don't do a sync. Everything just gets copied. And if I delete it from my primary workstation, it does not delete it from the backup systems. Now, that means my backup systems have to have a lot more disk space than my primary system, but it saved my butt.
But yeah. So have you built rules? I mean, at some point, if you delete something, do you never, ever delete it from your backup system? Or
No, I don't.
So your backup system is everything?
Yeah.
It must be huge.
It's pretty huge. Yeah.
And the other one that people, you know, I know if this was a live show, people would say, hey, what about Time Machine? And I think Time Machine is, you know, kind of a nice little thing for the consumer. And I think it can be useful. I think the issue for us photographers is, you know, Time Machine keeps these redundancies back and back and back. But unless you have an enormous storage space for it, it's you know, if you're dealing with hundreds of gigabytes at a time, it's going to fill up and just start deleting the oldest stuff awfully quick.
Yeah, it's not a good. I don't think that's a great solution.
It's not for professional use. It doesn't seem like. Now, you said RoboCopy. Is that something for PC or is that a program? Or where can people check that out?
It's RoboCopy is this little program. It's been available on resource kits since Windows XP. It's built into Windows 7.
Okay.
And it's just a command line. It's just like the old copy command, except it's a lot more powerful and it's faster and all that. And really, I could run the same command. Instead of doing /E, I can do /M and it will sync if I wanted to. So I can do it that way. I choose not to, so that if I delete something, it's not deleted off the backups.
Sure. Yeah, no, this is good stuff, and definitely I'm glad we're talking about this because I've been meaning to for a long time. I do think the biggest thing that's ignored, even among people that back up, is the offsite. And maybe I'm just kind of peevish about offsite. But I run into people all the time that, yes, they have backups. And they're like, no, I don't really have an offsite. I just have copies in the house. And to me, you're just asking for trouble. I mean, what about when you get robbed? Where do you stand? And I think an offsite, whether it be, even if it's something like Backblaze, which I don't consider, you know, maybe they'll go away tomorrow, but at least you have a backup. Now, you mentioned data, Carrie, and I think that how you, what you options you have available is also depends on what you have. I mean, we have fiber around here that's municipal and it's not super expensive and it's really, really fast. So
right,
I can put 100 gig wedding in and I'll come back the next morning and all 100 gigs will be uploaded.
I mean, unless they've changed it, because both Backblaze and Carbonite had a 2 gig per day upload.
No. That's why I went with Backblaze, is because there is no upload. I have like 2 terabytes on Backblaze. And, I, you know, sometimes I might upload, when I do a wedding, like I say, I might upload 60, 70, 80, 100 gigs and like 24 hours later, it's done.
Okay, because I had tested Backblaze too, and okay. it had, when I did it, it had an upload limit.
How long ago was this?
Two, 18 months ago, okay. 2 months, 2 years ago. And even back then, with, I think I had 2 or 3 terabytes of data that was sitting here, and I let it go for like 2 weeks to see what was going to happen.
Right.
I go and I check the status, and it said, you will be completely backed up in 185 days. And then I'm like, okay, so let's do the math here. So that's 185 days. I'm generating, you know, X amount of data a month, which nowhere near what I'm generating now.
Right.
So every month I'm adding to this queue, and I figured with the amount that I was generating, it was going to be about 14 months before I was actually up to date. So I'm like, this just does not work. I mean, I can't use a backup system that's not going to be current for over a year. Right. And now if you're saying that Backblaze has removed that, that's awesome.
Well, unless I got in earlier and I was grandfathered in, but I send people to Backblaze because it's inexpensive and I can't imagine they're making money on me, you know, because I have a ton of data on there. But most of these kind of sites charge for, you know, over, they have these gigabyte plans, and Backblaze was truly unlimited. You could put anything you wanted on there and it's like $5 a month. So it's dirt cheap and I have a ton on there. And you know, so yeah, check it out. I haven't heard from anybody that I've recommended it to that it wasn't taken at all. But you do, for an offsite, whatever kind of online backup you're using, you have to have a good connection. Because when I first moved to the new studio in this part of the town, they didn't have the fiber, and I was using a cable connection, and I was only like 3 megs up. And it wasn't keeping up. Like you said, I mean, it was always uploaded. It never really got there because it was running too slow. So you really do have to have, maybe, no, I think it was 1 meg up is why it was so slow. You really do have to have a good connection to maintain it. Otherwise, you have an issue where, okay, I have an offsite, but it's never actually backed up because it never keeps up.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. Jared, Dennis, Barry, any of you guys, we're kind of getting towards the end here, and we've covered some good stuff. Any of you guys have any input on all this stuff?
Back up.
Yeah, that's
like
the main
the idea. Back, you have to back up at least 3 times: 2 on-site, 1 off-site at very least.
Yeah.
Yep.
Agreed. And you know, whatever you do, have a system, and don't just ignore it because it's daunting. You know, once you figure something out, it's not terribly hard. You will have to spend a little bit of money. I mean, welcome to photography, but it's really important because you could literally lose everything tomorrow. Yeah. You know, that's on your current machine, and it's really scary when I see people that are doing weddings and stuff and they don't have a proper backup. So, all right, good discussion. If nobody has any more input on that, we will swing into our picks of the week and kind of wrap it up, keep this show from going to 3 hours long. And it's been some good topics. We talked about some business stuff, but got into some technical stuff too, which I always like to do, get a little bit of variety going. So, who wants to start? Barry, do you have a pick of the week for us?
I have 2 picks of the week for you.
Awesome.
I have the custom bracket company. Just finally picked up one of their rotating brackets. Absolutely love it. I was inspired, helped Dennis finish up a wedding a few weeks ago. And he has how old is yours, Dennis? Maybe 2 or 3 years old?
No, the one that I've got, it's probably getting close to 10 years, actually.
Wow. That old. Okay. Well, in any event, I was like, wow, I really like the way that looks. My local camera supply store actually carries the line. I found one that just fits my needs perfectly. I love the way it rotates. It's handy. It's great. I just love it. So that's very, very nice. Custom brackets, highly recommended.
And what
second is
custombrackets.com?
I believe so. Yep.
Okay.
And yep, and just they make you know, brackets. Although I will say a power user tip is don't even look at the individual components. If you're gonna get one, just get a kit. The kits include the mounting brackets and so on. They do sell some of the individual components. You'll go mind numbing trying to figure out all of the different variations to the brackets. So
just start with the standard one and go from there.
Start with the kits and go from there, and they have several different levels. Then the other thing is just my little venture. I'm just starting to product test and deal with my Jumbrella.
Oh yeah.
It is a massive umbrella that has a 9-foot span intended. I have the first 10 kind of prototype units I actually have on eBay right now. It is intended for outdoor use. It has a spiked kind of pole that goes into the ground. It has four tent stakes that kind of snap the backside down. The flaps open up a little bit so air can pass through it. It is a silver lined, not a highly reflective, but just a nice matte silver kind of gray lining. I've used it now on a wedding. I've used it on an outdoor team. You fire a power head of some kind. I used an Alien Bee with the portable power pack to be able to throw F5, 6, F8, F11 worth of light out of this massive light source and cover an entire group. Boy, you tell you what, you look like something. And maybe Gabby, you and I will talk about maybe getting it on the Pro Photo Show page, perhaps.
Yeah,
It's really something. I mean, it's just it takes you to a different kind of level. It's not intended for great portability, of course, but to set up where you are going to either use it to reflect light or even possibly block some light, you know, from coming in a more of a subtractive lighting sense. You could even do that. Plus, it's big enough where if the rain does come rolling in, you got somewhere you can kind of tuck your gear under quick. So you got to see it to believe it. It's really crazy.
And where can they see it, Barry? Where can they see it?
Well, I still have it on eBay right now. If you just do a search for oversized umbrella, it pops right up.
But yep, kind of the concept of this is you're going out, rather than like having something super expensive made custom, you're going out and finding components and stuff that you can use and trying to keep this pretty reasonable is what's cool about
it. Exactly, and just to make it, you know, you go and buy look how expensive a 72-inch or, you know, large umbrella is, and it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and doesn't even hold a candle to what the lighting potential for this kind of a unit is. So
what kind of listeners get one of the early edition Jumbrellas for?
$129.
Wow. Awesome. Oh, well, send me a link to your eBay page to start with. But it sounds to me like you're going to need to get a website and a Facebook page and all this stuff going, because this might be very cool.
I'm still playing with it. I'm actually I'm waiting for my friend Dennis to test. I gave him one last weekend, so I'm anxious for him to play around with it out in the backyard with the kids or something and plan and kind of see what he comes up with. But
what it's got me thinking is, I mean, how big of a span can you throw light out? I mean, what happens if you dumped in, you know, a bunch of alien bees into this? I mean, could you actually light a landscape scene even? I mean, how far does this go?
It's a great question. I don't know. I really haven't tested that type of distance. My application was to try it initially with the team, just because I had some teams I was shooting, and it was a perfect day to come in and light it like that. The results were stunning. A wedding I just did a couple of weeks ago. You want to look like something. Set up an umbrella with a 9-foot span on the side of a little hill and set your wedding party up and start doing some shots.
Yeah.
You don't look like the amateur with the Canon Rebel anymore, I'll tell you that.
Soon to be available at Black Belt Lighting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we might have to talk.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing. We'll definitely come back to this as you experiment and as you kind of get it out there, because I think this is a really cool idea and really a way to, you know, spread some light out. And, I mean, just to give people an idea, what's the main advantage of doing this, just so they can get that light out there, really, really spread it out and get it nice and soft and really manage that light?
We always know the bigger the light source, the softer the light.
Right.
And when we get outside so much, you know, what I'm getting a little bored with is how much harsh fill flash.
Oh, yeah.
All the rage popular right now. And
more like
there's something
easy,
to be said
so.
For being able, Exactly. So to be able to soften the light and have great control, but over a large group, because we don't always take a picture of just one person at a time.
Right.
And so some of the stuff I did with this wedding party with, you know, 12, 14 people or whatever, to be able to just kind of randomly have them spread out across this hill and be able to have throw this light at them. And I only had the thing, that alien bee, probably running on quarter power out there.
Awesome.
And it balanced perfectly. It was awesome.
And it's all about the light. You know, that's what's
it's all about the light. Yep.
Barry, your voice is cutting out a little bit, so watch it if you're using data or internet or something for something else. It's kind of weirding out a little bit.
I feel so insignificant with my little soft boxes now.
I'll tell you what, Carrie. But you know what? Portable is awesome too. But I'll put a buffer in between you and let Dennis go.
I've got modifier envy.
quite common for us males. Okay. So what we do here is I got a pick here. Kind of timely at one. Final Cut Pro 10 is now in the App Store, yes. which I was looking forward to just getting into more video work and more time lapse stuff. It's $300, so it's not a cheapy pick. And as far as the pick goes, all I can tell you is that the download went great. I haven't opened it up yet, but it looks like it's got some neat features. And coming from somebody who has never used Final Cut Pro. And just been living in iMovie pretty much since the dawn of time.
Right. Right.
It looks like it's going to be a smooth transition, smoother than if I had come from Final Cut world of workflow. And it does look like it honestly does look like iMovie Pro.
Cool. Very nice.
which could be a good thing and a bad thing.
Well, there's some continuity there at least.
Yeah, and so you're going to see reviews both ways. I think the diehards might say, what are they doing? You know, almost like, what? They're going to make digital cameras affordable?
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. You know, now the same software that Aunt Betty gets to use to make her movies is going to be available to, you know, but it still is a $300 price tag compared to, you know, free pretty much for iMovie. And then they also released a couple other things that work with it. They were released motion and compressor, two things which I don't know a whole lot about, but I just noticed that this was kind of the thing that was up and about today.
Excellent.
That thing the internet was buzzing about.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to move off of that topic.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that's actually pretty reasonable. And, you know, $300, I mean, obviously that's money, but compared to, I'm a Premiere guy and I get it with the Creative Suite, but, you know, you buy that outright and it's probably going to be six or seven. So $300 isn't half bad for a pro level. And also there's, I don't know all the differences, but people have Final Cut Express if they want something more in the $99 range that's a little more than iPhoto, but not quite.
Right.
Final Cut. So yeah. Some options.
It was just over a 1.3 gigabyte download, but whatever, you know,
awesome.
Just sit down and start it. And I did have one tip. That's kind of, and I haven't really used that product yet. So I can't really, I feel kind of lame picking it as a pick, but just to let everybody know that that's out there. And then my other tip real quick is, it's amazing how many light modifiers, which is, seems to be a theme today. You know, that for those people who aren't looking to spend $100, $200, $300, $400 on a light modifier, just a quick little tip, and I think I mentioned it before on the show, but if you've got a speed light and you just want to soften that light a little bit, just grab yourself one of them fancy high-tech white coffee filters. It's amazing how often I still use a white coffee filter.
Nice.
Obviously you trim it up and put a nice silver or gold banner on that thing, make it look professional, because you want to be that guy with the shaggy old coffee filter around your speed light. But it just provides, if the lighting is right and you've got it just the right situation, it does soften the light up so nicely. You know, and ask any one of us on right now, how many, you know, do you have a box or a bag full of speed light modifiers?
Exactly. Well, and what, do you have a brand preference for your coffee filters?
Just mostly stick with white.
Okay.
Don't do the tan unless you're going for that Mediterranean look. I stick to the white, and I think we'll carry over this theme of modifiers with our good friend Carrie Garrison.
Very cool. And I just want to add to that real quick. I'll link your second pick there in the show notes. You can actually get a box of Bun 100 count coffee filters for $3.91 with free shipping.
Thank you, Gavin. That'll last you to the end of time.
Yeah, that's good. That's a lot of flashes.
In cart purchase.
Carrie, yeah.
Okay. So I'll start off. Well, I mean, of course, the 5D Mark III that was released today. I mean, that should be everybody's pick. But
whoa, what? Huh?
No, I'm kidding. Burn. So I was kind of explaining this photo shoot that I had to do earlier this week. I've got 300 little bottles of oil, and the customer was very, very picky about the labels being adjusted just right and everything being absolutely perfect. So this was certainly a good case for tethered shooting, so I could do it fairly quickly and have them all brought into Lightroom already with a particular filter, you know, or a preset applied to them, and really minimize my workflow. And I thought I had a copy of DSLR Remote Pro around, and I didn't. It had expired, and it's like $90 for it. So I was like, "All right, well, you know, I might have to go ahead and buy it." And then I remembered that I had got another product called Smart Shooter, and it's much less. It's only about $50, so not quite, but almost half the cost of DSLR Remote Pro. And Smart Shooter does all the same things. It's got live view right on my screen with an overlay, so I could easily line up the images perfectly every single time.
Wow!
And boom, just snap, 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 right off one right after the other. But Smart Shooter does some other cool things where it actually has a scripting language in it, and you can do things like take a series of 10 shots, adjusting the focus on every shot. And it will adjust the focus on your camera. So you can do exposure stacking. You can do focus stacking. You can do all kinds of crazy things, you know, for, you know, nighttime shots or whatever you can think of.
So it's actually talking to the camera then, not just grabbing the image.
Right, right. It's controlling a lot of the aspects of the camera.
Awesome.
And very cool tool for only $50.
No kidding.
If you're into the tethered shooting and you're looking for something that's a lot more powerful than just the EOS utility, Smart Shooter for $50. I mean, that was a big win for me this week. Seriously helped me out on a job I was working on.
I'm downloading it right now. That's awesome. And well, what I really like is, you know, you mentioned the idea that you can actually do camera control stuff with it, because I don't do a lot of commercial work where I'm needing to do tethered shooting, but now you get into stuff, you know, where you're extending that beyond and you can control even more stuff. You know, who knows what that could be useful for? I mean, can I actually, so it goes over the USB, right?
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here thinking, okay, I'm doing these road trips. What if I set up my camera and I get some USB extenders and I have like 200 feet of USB cable and I'm doing like star trails, but I can do it from the comfort of my camper? Is that
sure?
Is that like too much?
I mean, you'd have to play around with USB cable lengths, but I mean, you can do things like that. It was put the camera on top of the RV.
Right. Dennis? And Dennis?
What?
Too lazy? Question mark?
Any USB cable over 30 feet is considered lazy. Continue.
Okay. No, but seriously, Kerry, that's awesome. That's really cool.
That's the one. And then, of course, with the modifiers, you know.
Yeah, gotta mention, you got a cool modifier going on. Tell us real quick about that.
I've had the Black Belt Lightning products for a while. We've talked about them on the show. I've got the wireless triggers and the YN560s. But a lot of people kept asking me for a softbox. And
awesome.
I loved softboxes. Used to use them all the time. But I would never take them apart because they're such a pain to put back and forth together. And then I started using other ones that kind of open like an umbrella, but they're really long to store and they're really expensive to take out in the field. And I came across these new style softboxes they fold up just like a reflector. So they're small enough that when they're folded, they can fit in the outside pocket of most camera bags.
Nice.
But when they're open, they're like 24 by 24 inches. They've got the internal diffuser. Really awesome things for use with speed lights. And I got a nice bracket with them. So, I mean, this has just been, I'm loving softboxes again. And I put them up on the website. If you go to blackbeltlion.com, I got a little video that kind of shows how I'm using them and how they fold up and how small they get. But as soon as you see these things, you're just like, oh, wow, that is just a cool product. So that's kind of my second pick because I just think it's a very cool product. Because I'd say it if someone else had it because I've been looking for something that was this easy to use as a softbox for a long time.
Great. What's it called, Kerry?
It's the Black Belt Lighting Easy Softbox. And I've got three different sizes, 20 by 20, 24 by 24, and 32 by 32.
Cool. And what kind of price range are we talking about?
I think they range between 50 and 70.
Oh, great.
Uh, So they're not horribly expensive for what you're getting compared to like the Westcott Apollo is like $160.
Right. Right. Is someone having a heart attack over there?
don't interfere with someone dying on us.
Someone choking. I'm just picturing this horrible scene happening over in Minnesota or something. Everybody is.
Yeah, because it just sounded really weird there for a second.
Dennis?
Hello.
Hi, Barry?
We're all here.
Jared's there too. Okay, I'm actually just making sure. I actually am like, wait, what if somebody just died? That would be, wow.
Well, we tweeted, Gavin.
I'm dying.
So to answer the question, Gavin, they're 55, 65, and 75, respectively.
Okay, very good. No, that's great. And so we'll link those in the show notes, but head over to blackbeltlighting.com and check those out. Very cool. And who do we have left? Jared, Mr. J-Roller, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm a big iPad user. I use it all the time for all things fun and professional. And I'm also a very big Nick software user, and they came out with their own little app for the iPad, and it's called Snapseed. And basically, it's a photo manipulation app where you can apply these different effects that they have, but it's a little bit different because if you're familiar with their U-Point technology, you can actually, it's not the U-Point technology per se, but they're taking a page from that book and mixing it with pretty much the gestures of being able to use an iPad, and you're able to do some pretty hardcore editing for an iPad app. I mean, it's really amazing. Wow, and I could see this thing just growing and with updates having more effects being put on, and you can do the normal things like rotate, straighten, crop, things like that. But you know, it's all about the effects, and they took a real good page from their Color Effects Pro software, which I use all the time. So I think it's $4.99, and of course it's in the iTunes App Store.
Now, Jared, just to make sure, because with Nick software, sometimes you don't know, you're talking $4.99, not $499, right?
Yes, it's $4.99.
Okay, just.
I mean, that's an amazing tool for $5.
No, that's absolutely great. Now, will this work on iPhone as well, or is it iPad photographers only?
No, it's only iPad specific.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll link that in the show notes as well. That's great. And let's see. Did you have another one, Jared, or is that all for today?
No, that'd be all. We're running along. I don't have to.
Super. Okay, sounds good. I have something that I think people are really going to like. And essentially what these are is skin-tight latex leggings for older men. And
are we on the right show?
What type of photo shoot?
Where'd we go?
This is the new style. This is trending at weddings. It's nothing weird. It's just tight latex pants.
It sounds very revealing.
Not really. I mean, yeah, you can kind of see the hair underneath, but...
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Okay, no, I just picture Barry, you know, and he's got these... Okay, let's stop.
I don't want to picture me.
No, I really do have a pick this week. I just had to throw that in there because it's an idea I'm working on for our product. No, not really.
Awkward.
Awkward. My pick this week is Kim Wipes. I know
Is this one real too? I can't tell.
Did you have another baby?
This one is real. I know the name is a little weird, but they're called Kim Wipes.
Oh.
And I'm not making this. I'm actually linking this in the show notes and in the chat for you guys as well. What these are is I'm always looking for a better way to clean my lenses and actually get them clean. So what I did is I started poking around and looking at different lens wipes and things like that and things that people like that work really well for cleaning their lenses. Kim wipes are essentially Kleenex for your lenses. These are made for labs and things like that where they need to wipe things off. And it's kind of like a dry lens cleaning cloth. So you need a lens cleaning solution with this. But you get a box and it works like a Kleenex box. And it has, I don't know, 100 or 200 for like $5 or $10 in this box. And you just grab one of these and then you clean your lens with it. Now, to go along with that, though, I said, okay, if I'm going to take this route, admittedly, it's a little more of a pain to use a lens clean solution and a wipe versus just like a pre-moistened lens cleaner. So I'm going to do it as good as I can. I started looking into it and checking out a lot of reviews and things like that, and I found this right here, which I'm linking in there as well, and this is called Purisol.
That is my absolute favorite.
And so I waited for this. I got it, and I hadn't ever heard of this. I'm sure some of you guys have heard of this. Obviously, Carrie has. And Purisol with Kim Wipes, this cleans lenses for real. Now, Purisol has super good reviews. I mean, I'm sure you could use this with other wipes. You could probably use this with whatever brand you prefer.
Microfiber.
Yeah, yeah, microfiber, whatever you like. But it's a really good lens cleaner. I don't know exactly what makes it better. I mean, they say it's all state-of-the-art and biodegradable and, you know, all this stuff. But the bottom line is I got this bottle, and I went in there and sprayed my lens and then used it in coordination with one of these little wipes, and it cleaned my lens. I mean, it really did a great job. So I guess they're both my pick. If you get one, get the Purisol and use it with whatever your favorite wipe is. And I like the idea of the Kim wipes. I'll still carry a microfiber cloth, and that's probably what I'll use in the field. But the little disposable wipes that were inexpensive, I think, are really effective too. But great lens cleaner, and it can be really frustrating. You know, when a lens is brand new, it's all shiny and perfect. And then a year and a half later, you realize that even though you've been cleaning your lens for a year and a half, it's just kind of crudded up, and it's not as clean as really it should be. I looked at my lens through a loop the other day, and I was astounded how much crud was on it. And this really does clean lenses. So Kim Wipes and Purisol, I'll link those both in the show notes. Check them out because they're really cool.
That is nice. Awesome stuff. We have bottles of that around the house. We use it on our glasses. We use it on our lenses.
Awesome. Oh, I see you did a review of it too on Camera Dojo. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's not cheap. I mean, it's kind of expensive, but you don't go through it very fast.
It lasts a long time.
Okay, well, we've been going for quite a while. Does anybody else have any final closing things they want to throw out there? And if not, I'll kind of round everybody off with our shout-outs on websites and stuff, and we'll go from there. Anything anybody wants to mention before we wrap for the day?
I got something here for us.
Go for it, Dennis.
This kind of ties the whole episode together.
Okay, do it.
I'm going to read a paragraph here of something. Cool. So just bear with me, okay. And then I'll tell you. These are not my words.
Is this story time?
It's a little bit of story time, aww, so just sit back, relax. Okay. Don't worry, we won't get into 3 hours of show. This is called, this is titled Photography as a Profession. It starts off, many young people today are attracted to photography as a profession. For those, encouragement plus a word of caution is in order. It is true that the field of professional photography is growing, and that each year there are new opportunities in press and illustrative photography, in scientific and industrial photographic work, and in portrait and general commercial studio work. Success in any of these fields, however, is not to be had by wishing. It calls for a measure of native ability, plus either thorough schooling in a good photographic school, or the equivalent in hard, routine studio work, without the immediate glamour that many expect. As in other fields, there is always room at the top for those of outstanding ability and serious intent, and the rewards are high. But for the careless worker and the second rater, there is no room anywhere. Now, those are words from
1953.
Close. How to Make Good Pictures, a guide for the amateur photographer by Eastman Kodak Company.
Wow.
1951. Very
awesome. Close.
Barry, you get so much props in my book. But how relevant is that to this episode and to the way that things are 60 years after those words were written?
Wow, that's really cool. And that's a great round off, Dennis, because I wanted to get into some topics of art history and stuff today, and we didn't get into it. So we definitely want to do that in another round table, because there's so much cool things we can learn from the past. But just really quick to add to that, I was reading I have the history of photography, and I'm reading through this book, kind of getting all kinds of neat tidbits from it. But when very early on, when it was all first happening and the daguerreotype got released, this is like the first official, you know, camera and system of making photographs that was mainstream. And in no time at all, like as soon as it came out, everybody went out and was making these cameras. And it says in this book, in the history of photographer, it was absolutely astounding. Everybody was going out and being a photographer. And this was 1850s, 1860s, somewhere in there. And yeah. I was like, holy cow, that happened 150 years ago too? So these old stories are so cool. Thank you for that. And actually, can you like read a fairy tale now? Because that was actually kind of relaxing listening to you read that.
And in the land of Washington, Mr. Syme would not take no for an answer with his camera his coffee maker.
Was that freestyle? That was pretty good.
Oh, I can pull anything up.
Nice.
But yeah, so that's all.
That was cool.
That was very fitting.
Do you have a link? Was there actually a post somewhere? Can you send me a link and I can put it in the show notes? Or
that,
I guess we...
That, That came right out of the old rattered, tattered book I've got in front of me.
Well,
so
they'll just have to listen to Pro Photo Show to get it and listen to Dennis's first audiobook.
That's right. Here on Audible. Yeah.
Hey, there's a marketing idea. Anyway, no, very cool. Everybody, thank you so much. Let's go through and have everybody shout out where people can check them out. And let's start with you, Z Power. Where can they find you?
Same old, same old. Twitter, Facebook, on the web, DZPix, DZPICS.com.
On all of those. Same handle.
Brand continuity.
Excellent job, Dennis. Excellent. B Groover, where can we find you at?
PicturePlace.com, and for brand uncontinuity on Twitter, fstop95.
Excellent. And just for the record, I made up all these handles, but you guys can make up your own next time. You know, I just figured I'd get us off to a start here. Mr. K.
Of course, you can always find my stuff over at cameradojo.com. We're getting ready to do our 100th podcast. We're giving away over $2,000 worth of different things that Carrie's awesome. Favorite things, trying to be Oprah for the day kind of thing nice. Going on. And at blackbeltlighting.com with all my lighting equipment designed for creating great images on a budget.
Very cool. And Jay Roller.
I'm not going to get used to that nickname. You can find me. You can find me at my website.
JRoller.com is available.
Yeah, probably not after this podcast. everything is JaredMichaelStudios.com. You can find me on Facebook, at the website, on Twitter, and I'd like to give a little shout out to my wife of 4 weeks.
Awesome! Hey! Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, newlyweds.
Cool. You've joined the old man status with the rest of us now.
Mm-hmm. The wedding ring, the engagement ring, the suffering.
Yeah, my favorite. Very cool. And Jared Michael Studios, just be clear, how do they spell that? JARROD, is that right?
Yeah, JARROD Michaels.
MICHAEL Studios.com.
That's correct.
Very cool. And I'm here, ladies and gentlemen. G-Pixel. We're going to spin down this vinyl and wrap this up. You can find me, as usual, all my projects, including my fiction writing projects that I've started doing with my brother. Well, I've actually been doing for a few years, but starting to actually get some stuff coming out into the wild. And all my projects at SIEMStudios.com, SEIMStudios.com. And of course, another quick shout out for one of the things that keeps all this going, SIEMEffects.com, SEIMEffects.com. You can get all your editing tools over there. And of course, the workshops coming up, including Cloning Magic and the Burn and Dodge workshop, which are going to be a lot of fun. So thank you all for joining us. Been fun and good stuff. We'll see you all next time. Get out there and let's make some photos better than ever. And we'll see you all over on the forums and in the comments. You can find the show notes, profotoshow.net. And of course, join the conversation over at profotoshow.net/forums. Thank you all and catch you later.